The Electrician Podcast, powered by Schneider Electric. We're bringing you the electrical industry experts you need to hear to discuss the topics you need to know about.
So welcome to another episode of the Electrician Podcast. Chatting to us today, we have John Bradley, who is going to be discussing the 18th edition of the IET wiring regulations. So John, thanks for joining us today. It's great to have you on the show.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Great stuff. Can you give us a quick introduction as to who you are, what you do?
For Schneider Electric, my work is in standardisation, which means I work on the IET wiring regulations and on the international and European standard that lies behind the wiring regulations and which gives us much of the content that's in there. I chair the National Wiring Regulations Committee, JPEL 64. But of course, today I don't speak in that capacity. I speak as somebody who works for Schneider Electric.
Thank you very much, John, for that introduction. So let's get started then. So the 18th edition of the wiring regulations was published on the 1st of July 2018 and enforced from the 1st of January 2019. What can you tell us about the main changes it brought?
Well, it brought quite a few changes. I mean, in terms of products, there were changes affecting RCDs or the application of RCDs, arc fault detection devices. As we probably most of us know now, there's a recommendation that they be applied in certain situations. Support of wiring systems so that they don't collapse prematurely in the event of fire. Now, that requirement was originally applying only to escape routes, but now it applies to all areas served by the installation. There are also changes in the section that deals with the application of surge protective devices, and that's in case of effects on the installation due to lightning striking in the vicinity of the building that's served by the installation, or due to switching, surges due to switching. So I think those are the main changes affecting products. Oh, energy efficiency. There is an appendix dealing with energy efficiency, and obviously there are implications there as far as the application of products go. Products that use less energy and products that that control the use of energy in the building or regulate it.
So can we delve a little bit deeper into some of those areas then, John?
It's probably best if I sort of lead us through the main changes in the book, some of which don't affect products and some of which do. But there's changes in the requirements for main bonding, metallic pipes in the building having an insulated section at their point of entry. Anything beyond that insulated section, or if the incoming services to the building are plastic, then it's not required that the metallic pipework beyond that point is main bonded. Another one, the maximum disconnection times in table 41.1 now apply for final circuits not exceeding 63 amps with one or more socket outlets, and 32 amps for final circuits supplying only fixed current using equipment. Regulation 411.3.3 relating to additional protection for socket outlets and for supplies for mobile equipment outdoors. That's been revised and now applies to sockets with rated current not exceeding 32 amps. It was formerly for sockets up to 20 amps. The exemption for a specified or labelled socket outlet for connection for a specific item of equipment, such as your refrigerator or tropical fish or something, that's been removed. So the only basis that you could get an exemption from having RCD protection for socket outlets is if you're not in domestic premises, then there would have to be a documented risk assessment carried out with the risk assessment attached to the electrical installation certificate that you provide for doing the work. But that option to have a risk assessment isn't available for domestic premises. Protection against thermal effects. Now, this is AFDDs. A new regulation has been introduced, Regulation 421.1.7, recommending the installation of arc fault detection devices to provide protection against fire caused by arc faults in AC circuits. These are recommended, they're not required, but they're recommended for premises with sleeping accommodation, locations with risk of fire due to the nature of stored materials, locations with combustible materials, wooden buildings and that kind of thing, and fire propagating structures. That might be a structure with an atrium, for instance, or any kind of structure that would allow fire to spread more easily. And finally, for locations with endangered or irreplaceable goods. So that's AFDDs. The most probably the most important one is premises with sleeping accommodation. So that's going to cover all sorts of domestic premises, hotels, all that kind of thing. The regulation on escape routes has been redrafted and a note's been added stating that cables need to satisfy the requirements to the construction product regulations. I'm sure we're all interested in that. SBDs, now this is important. Section 443, protection against transient overvoltages of atmospheric origin, in other words, lightning or due to switching, has been redrafted. You could previously, many situations didn't require surge protective devices because of what was called the AQ criteria, and that was really dependent on how much lightning you're likely to get in the circumstances. But things have been redrafted in the 18th edition, and instead the regulation requires that protection against transient overvoltages, in other words, SBDs, has to be provided where the consequences of overvoltage could result in serious injury or loss of human life, interruption to public services, interruption to commercial or industrial activity, or could affect a large number of people in one location. So for all other cases, a risk assessment has to be carried out to determine whether SBDs are required. But in single dwellings, where the total value of the installation and equipment doesn't justify such protection, it could be omitted. But what you have to bear in mind with dwellings these days, people have a lot of expensive electronic equipment, hi-fis, TVs, musical instruments, all that kind of thing. We've got intelligent homes now. And, you know, bearing in mind the probable cost of providing SPD protection for your home, it could cost you a great deal of money if there's a lightning strike and it destroys a lot of your electronic equipment. SPDs also provide protection against switching surges. Now, support for wiring systems, that's something else. As I say, the requirements for support of wiring systems to prevent premature collapse in the event of fire have been revised, and they now apply to all areas of the premises that are served by the electrical installation, not just to escape routes. What this means is wiring systems, it's not likely to be acceptable to support a wiring system purely by plastic clips or cable ties, or purely by plastic mini trunking, that sort of thing. There's going to have to be some metallic supports in there. Not every support, but some metallic supports to prevent the wiring system from collapsing in the event of a fire. This doesn't apply to cables in a void above a plasterboard ceiling, for instance, or above some other kind of fire protected ceiling, because if that provides the necessary shielding from heat, or would even support the cables if they were to drop inside the void. That's support of wiring systems. Energy efficiency, Appendix 17 of the wiring regulations covers energy efficiency. This is an advisory appendix. The international standard 60364, IEC 60364, that is an HD 60364, they have a section 8.1 on energy efficiency, and that is quite a long section. Now, it was decided by the UK National Committee not to include that in the wiring regulations itself. There's a feeling that the wiring regulations is a safety document, and the view of the committee was that those requirements shouldn't be included in the wiring regulations as requirements. And in consequence, the BSI have published that part of the international standard as a separate document. And the wiring regulations, the 18th edition, has this Appendix 17 that gives recommendations, really, on the application of energy efficiency, availability of energy, design requirements, determination of load profile, voltage drop, cross-sectional area of conductors, power factor correction, and control arrangements for electrical equipment. So that's really a brief summary of the main changes that affect products.
Okay, thank you, John, for that.
Okay.
Can we talk a little bit about Amendment 1, which was released in February this year, and what that says?
Yeah, Amendment number 1 is the amendment for electric vehicle charging. Now, that relates to Section 722 of the wiring regulations. And well, there's some changes to different parts of Section 722. The section on maximum demand and diversity, That's been revised. It allows for what's called load curtailment now, where either the electric vehicle charging load or the loads in other parts of the installation, I suppose, can be controlled to match the available supply and thereby keep the maximum demand of the installation down within the available supply capacity. The safety measures for the use of PME, protective multiple earthing, have been amended, so there are some new ways to comply and different ways to comply. They've been included. The regulations on external influences have changed. I mean, briefly, the equipment now outdoors is going to have to be at least IP44. The requirements on residual current devices have been amended. What's required now is purely a type A RCD. Can't be used for additional protection of the charging equipment, and certainly not a type AC. So it can't just be a type A. It's either got to be a type B, and that's the type that it's all about, actually, detecting DC present in the fault current, which is a particular problem with electric vehicle charging. So you've either got to have a type B RCD, and they're quite expensive, or a type A RCD in conjunction with what's called an RDC-DD. Now that's a device that works in conjunction with the RCD to disconnect the supply if there is DC present, and particularly if it's present above more than the threshold that would render a type A or AC device blind. You know, so this does make it possible to use a type A device, but you do have to have this additional RCD-DD in conjunction with it, and that has to be used in accordance with the manufacturer of that product and the RCD, and in accordance with the recommendations of the charging equipment manufacturer. The guidance in the appendix to 722 has been modified in amendment number 1 as well, and that gives guidance on the use of PME supplies. And there's some quite detailed changes to that, which I won't go into now.
Thank you, John. And when will installations have to comply with Amendment 1?
Well, Amendment 1, let me see, it was issued on 1st of February this year. Its sole purpose is to make changes to Section 722. That's the special location section that deals with electric vehicle charging. Amendment 1 can be used immediately. You can use it straight away, but it has to be used for installations that start on site after 31st of July this year. And you can get a hold of a copy of it from the IET website. It's purely a download publication. I think you can possibly get a hard copy from the British Standards Institution, but the main way to get it is by downloading it. It's quite a short document. So in answer to your question, 31st of July is the date that it has to be used from.
Mm-hmm. Fabulous. So that was quite a thorough overview of the 18th edition. Can we just talk a little bit about JPL 64, of which you are chairman? Just to delve into a bit about what is JPL 64 and what's its purpose?
Well, that's interesting. A lot of people think the wiring regulations, the IET wiring regulations, the 18th edition and all the editions that went before that are written purely by the IET or the IEE as it used to be. Now, that used to be the case, but since 1992, this has been a British standard. It's a joint publication by the British Standards Institution and the IET. And it's really, in many respects, it's like many other British standards. I have to say it's better value than most British standards. You get a big document for less than £100, but I'm not trying to sell them. But JPL 64 is the committee that looks after the technical content, that's responsible for the technical content of the wiring regulations. It's got about 50 members. Some of those members represent the IET. I think about 8 of those members represent the IET. But the other members are all represent various bodies having an interest in the wiring regulations. So that includes manufacturers, it includes the health and safety executive, it includes Electrical Contractors Association, NAPIT, NIC, EIC, a whole host of others. They're all listed in the front of the wiring regulations. As I say, about 50 people in total, railway industry, lots of others. Much of the content of the wiring regulations is not homegrown British material. A lot of it comes from international standards, IEC, those are world standards, or from European standards that are adopted into Europe. That's CENELEC standards, sometimes called harmonisation documents. And we in the UK, we are members of the various committees that form the international wiring regulations and the European ones that ultimately come into our wiring regulations. We don't have things all our own way. That's how it is when you sit down with a group of people from other parts of the world. But it means we have our influence, and it means UK keeps its influence in the world, which is something we're going to need since we've left the EU and we're going it alone. So some of the content in the wiring regulations is homegrown. Our requirements for supporting cables in the event of fire so they don't prematurely collapse. Our requirements for protection of cables buried in walls, they're particularly good, I think, and probably are better than they have in other countries. So in a nutshell, that's what JPL 64 does, and that's what the wiring regulations is, or at least where the requirements are coming from.
Thank you, John. That's really interesting. I've known of JPL 64, but never known too much detail about their exact role in the regulations or who sits on the committee. So that's really interesting to find out a bit more about them. Just for our listeners, could we find out a bit more about you and your experience in the industry?
Yeah, well, I've been in the industry for a long time, for about 55 years now. I started off as an apprentice electrician, working on site back in, it seemed like 100 years ago, back in 1965. I worked on site for quite a few years, and then I went into the electrical contractor's head office to train to be an engineer, and I found that I was really quite good on the academic side after being at secondary modern school, failing my 11 plus exam, which we had to do in those days. And along the road, I managed to get a degree and become a chartered engineer. And I went from electrical contracting into consultancy to design electrical installations and get the supervise the installation work on site. I did that for 20 years or so. And I moved to NIC EIC, the voluntary regulatory body for electrical contractors. I'm sure many people know of NIC EIC. NIC, like other scheme providers now, looks after the Part P competent person scheme so that electrical contractors can self-certify electrical installation work. As well as NIC, EIC, I work for Electrical Safety First, which is a consumer protection body, and it looks after safety of electrical installations and safety of electrical products. And I retired from there, or at least I thought I'd retired, back in 2013, the end of 2013, and I was offered a position with Schneider Electric part-time to be involved in standardisation work, which is what I do now. And subsequently, I became chairman of the Wiring Regulations Committee. So that's me, really. It's always been about electrical installations. I never worked for a manufacturer before Schneider Electric, so here I am.
I'm sure everyone will agree that's quite a career you've had, and Schneider, we're very lucky to have you on board.
Oh, very lucky.
Can we ask a super obvious question now? Why is electrical safety so important?
Electricity can kill you, that's the thing. It can kill you by electric shock. It can kill you by mechanical movement. Those are the main ways. It can cause fires. So it's very important. Electrical safety in electrical installations is very important. The easiest thing in the world is to make things work with electricity. Almost anybody can do that. But the problem is to make them work safely under all conditions. That's another question altogether. You know, way back, we've had wiring regulations. We've had them for over 100 years now. They first of all were published by fire prevention insurers, and that job was taken over by the IEEE around the turn of the century. And really, that's the wiring regulations we have now. That's we're 18 editions on now. The IEEE, as they used to be called, and the IET now are the ones who publish them. But it's all for, really for safety. That's what underpins it. And we have a lot more products available to us now. It used to be fuses, predominantly rewirable fuses. But things have moved on now. We still do use fuses. They don't tend to be rewirable, but we use circuit breakers a lot more. And we use residual current devices, which are a great aid to safety. We first started using those, even way back, even 50 years ago, we were using them. We didn't call them that then. But RCDs have been applied in critical installations. And that's a pretty good thing, I would say, and it has increased safety a lot. But now we've got SVDs and AFDDs in the picture as well. So really, electrical safety, very important.
Thank you, John. So just to finish off, we have a different sort of question for you. If you could host a dinner party with three guests, alive or dead, who would you have to your dinner party and why?
Oh, well, I suppose my answer should be appropriate for this session. But I don't know, really. Very interesting. I think my personal choice is Michael Faraday. I think he'd be an interesting character to talk to. He made a lot of discoveries in electricity. Blimey, you're really asking me now, aren't you? Albert Einstein, probably, always found his stuff quite interesting. Don't know, third one. Off the wall, probably John Lennon, I would say. There we are. Nothing to do with electricity.
Sounds like a good dinner party to me. I'm sure there'd be some interesting conversations.
There would, I'm sure.
So thank you, John, for answering that surprise question we threw at you there. And thank you for chatting to us again today. It's been a pleasure as always. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. We hope that you found that useful. Do keep an eye out, or indeed an ear out, for the next episode coming soon.
Thanks for listening. If you are enjoying this show, please leave a review. Hit subscribe and stay tuned for more episodes.